Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is muddy boots. We all know plants need water to survive and grow, and I think most of us also know, possibly from experience, just how easy it is to damage and often kill plants from either too much or not enough water. So what are the rules to successfully watering both indoor and outdoor plants? Let's find out. Hi, Keith.
How are you going?
Again, shall we start with indoor plants?
Yes.
One of the most common garden questions I get is, what's wrong with my indoor plant? Mm. And the answer is usually that it's possibly not getting enough light and it's also possibly been overwatered.
Exactly.
How do you know when to water your indoor plants?
So I use a very, very incredibly
complex,
sophisticated tool.
Method.
No, tool. Okay. It's a sophisticated tool. It's called my finger.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to a pot plant and I can stick my finger into the potting mix and take it out and feel a bit of moisture, that plant doesn't need watering.
So when you say moisture, you mean dampness?
Just a little bit of dampness.
Dampness.
If you can feel dampness on your finger when you've put that into that mulch or into that potting mix,
yep,
and pull it out and feel a little bit of moisture, you don't need to water,
because that's
the problem.
Yes, but if you feel a bit of movement, then you know that's really probably a bit dry.
A bit dry, exactly.
Okay, all right.
And then you give it one good drink and then leave it.
A good
drink.
Go
back
for
and
a couple...
put that special tool away until...
For another week or another, 2 weeks.
At least a week. We've got a huge fiddleback fig at our place, and I reckon it would get watered once a month,
yep,
in the middle of summer,
yep,
and once every 2 months,
yep,
or 3 months in winter.
Wow. Okay. It's funny though, because I mention that to people. I say, just stick your finger in, yeah, that. Oh, no. I don't like the idea. God. Oh God, you can wash it.
They're not gardeners.
No. Now, I've been guilty, I have to admit, of overwatering my plants in the past, but I think now I found a fairly good routine with watering them pretty much every fortnight and a little bit less, as you say, mm-hmm, in winter. It seems to work quite well throughout most of the year, and they're all looking healthy enough.
Yes, look great.
I put them outside to water them, leave them to drain well before bringing them inside again.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have pebbles in their sources so that they're not sitting directly on the sources and in water, which
exactly,
I think is really important.
Exactly.
That way, air can get to the roots through the drainage holes, which helps them to dry out.
Mm-hmm.
And the pots obviously must have drainage holes.
Okay, yes. They do have to have a good drainage hole. And one of the best things you can do is when you're doing a repotting, whatever, is to ensure that there are some bigger pebbles in the bottom of your pot.
Yes.
So that hole cannot
fill
up with the fine potting mix that washes its way down through into the soil.
And then you get bugs as well.
Absolutely.
Which I can see one in my pot right now.
And I noticed that you've got all your plants in terracotta pots.
Yes.
Which also draw in moisture. So it can be accessed as the plants need it. They can pull that moisture out of the pots.
And they can absorb the the terracotta tends to absorb the moisture quite
exactly
a bit. Yes, it does. Now we're looking at some pileas, or they're also called Chinese money plants, and I also have a bromeliad inside that this routine seems to work with. But not all plants have the same requirements. Things like orchids are very sensitive to overwatering,
mm-hmm,
succulents are the same. But on the other hand, potted citrus plants require a lot of water.
And they do, and a lot of food. But let's just go back to one plant you mentioned there. It's called a bromeliad.
Bromeliad, yes.
Yes, okay. It doesn't actually need to be in a pot at all.
It can just be hanging on a tree.
It can be hanging on a tree, or because that's where they naturally grow,
yes,
on the sides of trees. And you'll notice that the way that they're actually formed, that they've got this cone in the centre.
Yes.
And that cone fills up with water.
Yes.
And that plant uses that water to survive.
Yes. So it absorbs it very slowly,
it
doesn't it?
Through the actual leaves of the plant.
So but mine's inside, so I'm not going to stick it on the wall.
No, you don't have to stick it on the wall.
I like
it's
in a pot.
Lovely over there, actually.
It seems to be fine in the pot.
Related to, of course, the pineapple, the bromeliads, in the same family.
Could sit it next to my little terracotta.
Sit next to your pineapple over there.
okay.
Yeah. So we also mentioned citrus in
yes,
pots. That can be really problematic, and it's,
mm-hmm,
but
sensitive little things they are.
You've got to make sure that you are keeping lots of food up to those things. And the best way to water or to feed and water a plant like a citrus in a pot is actually with a liquid fertilizer on a regular basis.
Okay, really. So what about in winter?
In winter, you
cut it
in half? You still cut it back by at least half.
Okay.
But once again, in the middle of winter, you'd use the old digit test again. Stick your finger into the soil, and if it feels slightly moist, there's just a bit of moisture there, that's enough through the winter period.
Okay.
But in summer, regular watering,
probably
on a weekly basis.
Oh,
you need
goodness.
A real good drink.
And keep the, something like Charlie Carp or something, or whatever it is, on.
Keep
watering
it going.
In the water every time.
Exactly.
Oh, wow, as much as that. At the moment, now that we're talking about this, I have my Maya lemon, which is sitting in a pot, quite a big pot, and it's finally fruiting quite happily, but they're not very big lemons, and some of the leaves are falling off. What does that mean, Keith? I don't know if it's not enough water or too much.
No, if the leaves are falling off, that's generally indicative that it's probably getting too much water. So the roots might be sitting in compacted, heavy potting mix, and it might be time for pulling them out and giving them a bit of a root tease. And
did it a year ago.
Yeah, but once again, don't forget they are incredibly heavy feeders and incredibly heavy drinkers in summer.
Okie dokes. So that's a big job, that one. What signs should we be looking for, moving on from my citrus problems, for in an over or underwatered plant, apart from my lemon tree?
If we pulled a leaf off any particular plant, whether it be a camellia or whatever, what we're holding in that leaf is a series of cells inside, millions of cells inside that, and those cells contain moisture, and what happens is that when a plant can't get access to moisture through the root system, they transpire. That is, they lose moisture out through the leaves, and those cells tend to collapse, because what's happening there is, as the cells collapse, they're trying to be like a vacuum cleaner. They're trying to suck up moisture that's in the soil and bring it up. So if you see a plant that all the leaves are drooping on a hot day, that means that plant is really
tired.
Looking for water.
So wilting leaves and droopy stems.
Yep.
Okay.
That means that plant is going into shock and needs a good drink.
And So what about if it's been overwatered?
Overwatered, you'll find that the leaves will burn and go brown on the outside.
That's for overwatering.
That's overwatering.
You think burning sounds like underwatering, but burning is actually overwatering.
Yes.
Okay, and also it can if they're overwatered, they can attract fungus gnats and things like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Generally, plants can be watered less in winter because they're dormant, but how much less? Is it always you cutting it in half, or is it, again, the knuckle test?
Exactly, and that's what you've got to do, because let's take this year, let's take this winter we've just had. We've had so much rain that you would never have to worry about going out there and watering plants during this period that we've got. You know, it's incredible. But go back 4 or 5 years ago, and we're having incredibly dry winters, then that's when those plants, particularly the evergreen varieties, need regular watering.
So does that mean you're not using your irrigation system at all this winter?
No, not at all. I haven't watered. The only thing I've watered this year are my vegetables.
Okay.
And that might only be once in a blue moon at this stage, because they have the soil, as I said, I use that incredibly funny tool, the digit, and go and stick it in the ground, and that's got lots of moisture. That's fine.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good to know, because I haven't been using mine much either, but I thought I needed to.
No.
Have you ever used a moisture meter?
I'll give you a little story on this.
I think I've heard
this
story.
I designed a garden up in Mount Martha, and the clients, after the landscapes had been and mulched and everything else and planted all the plants in, he called me up because all these plants were dying.
Why?
Because I went up there and I looked at them, and he could see that they had obviously gone through the stage of not having any moisture whatsoever. And I said to them straight away that those plants need to be established and you've got to water them in their first year. And the gentleman picked up this moisture meter when he went across and stuck it in right next to the plant and said, "Have a look at that." And I pulled.
What did it say?
It said plenty of water in the soil.
Oh.
So I pulled the moisture meter out and I pulled back the mulch and I put my hand down into the soil and picked it up and just dropped it in front of him and it was dry sand. It needs water, and a moisture meter
doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Obviously, that one
they
didn't
are
work.
Useless things.
Okay, absolutely, so don't get a moisture useless. Meter.
And,
anybody
and there's
there?
Another one, which is a pH meter. Don't buy those either. Get a packet of you know the proper
to do
stuff.
The test. Yeah. Okay, a well-drained potting mix is important. So that's the first thing that needs to be considered when buying an indoor plant. Make sure that it's really. You know, it's got the standard Australian standards ticks. That's really important too. If you've got the
and
right
it's a
soil,
good quality.
That's a good start. The first thing you need to do.
You go and buy a $2.99 packet of bloody potting mix. That's what you're getting. $2.99 packet of crap.
Now it's a good idea to use a watering can rather than a glass or bowl, so the water can be evenly spread across the top of the soil. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, and you get one with a nice fine rose, so it's putting out the water in a nice slow pattern. You know, so it's soft watering, not, you know, great big...
Yes. Heavy drips.
Heavy
drip heavy
or
drops.
Something, you know.
There are some very cute indoor watering cans out there too, I've noticed. The Plant Runner have some very pretty looking ones cans on their website. If anyone wants a little pretty can to have in their home next to their plants.
Mm.
Should we be concerned about the type of water we use? Because I always water my indoor plants from the kitchen tap, but I recently read that there's a difference between what comes out of the kitchen tap and out of the outdoor tap. Is there anything in that? Should we be worrying about that?
No, not in my opinion.
Okay,
no.
Fantastic.
The only thing you've got to be concerned about, and I have some clients that have got bores, for instance, and in certain areas, that bore water can have incredibly high amounts of total dissolved salts.
So,
you know, anything over about 1,200 parts per million of total dissolved salts, you've got to be mindful of. Whereas, you know, the water we drink here is you know, it's
delicious.
Delicious. It's tasteless.
Good.
And there's no salty content in that at all.
Okay.
So in some instances where we are using bore water and it's on just on the cusp of high salt content, we apply that to the soil, not to the foliage of the plant, and then we would give a supplementary feed of clean water during the you know in the summer during the week, just to wash those salts through.
Okay, well, luckily we don't have to worry about that.
No, we don't have to worry about that.
Okay. Watering systems, I think we should cover that. Mm-hmm. What watering systems do you recommend for the garden?
Look, I used to be a big fan of the drip lines. You know, they're a great system underneath, providing you've got them set up that you're in control of and you know where the moisture is going and how much moisture is being put out there. But years ago, I used to design all my systems using overhead sprinklers, pop-up sprinklers.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that a very effective way. And that's what I've got in my perennial bed. I've got all sprinklers that just pop up and spray out the volume of water that I decide and look upon. And the best time to water, of course, is early morning.
I'm surprised that you say that about the pop-ups because I always thought, and I'm sure we've discussed this before, that it's best to get the water getting to the roots rather than over the foliage and the plants especially. I know obviously early morning is good so the sun's not getting onto the foliage, but still I thought that the drip systems were good because they're actually getting to the roots rather than getting onto the top of the plant.
But it's also sometimes good to ensure that your plants are having a drink over the top, because they can take the water up through their leaves as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another positive to that one.
Okay. So you're not opposed to either?
No, I'm not opposed to either. And as I said, I've used both. I've had both. And just currently I'm using a
pop-ups.
So
you can see what's going on.
Or in my backyard where it's mainly all fruit trees and vegetable gardens, I use a hose because I know I can control how much water I'm putting out.
That takes
time.
And
lots and lots of mulch. Yeah, that's all right.
All right, for some, not for everybody.
No,
so that's when a system, I think, is a good idea.
And that's where you look at going for an automatic system. One that's coming on at, say, 3 o'clock in the morning when it's got the ideal pressure, because no one else is using the water, and it would come on early, the water would then get a chance to soak down through the soil profile into where the roots are, so that those plants can access that water when the heat of the day comes.
Yes, which I think is fantastic. Because I do have a drip irrigation system, thanks to you. Thank you, Keith. But there are certain areas of my garden, like my vegetable garden, that don't have that. Now, if I don't have time to water, use my hose, is there something, can I use a soaker hose over the vegetable garden? What would you suggest for those sort of areas that the drip irrigation system hasn't got to?
Yeah, in that case, I would put any sort of a sprinkler on that, on those things.
Oh, any old sprinkler.
Any old sprinkler. Yeah, because vegetables are different to plants, most other plants. Vegetables require 4 mil of water per day, every day of the year.
Gosh.
So that's
every single day.
Every single day that you've got those vegetables growing.
You're out there every day watering with your hose.
No, not this time of the year because we've got plenty of rainwater. And I use that digit again. Go and stick it in the soil. If it looks a bit dry, I'll give it a water.
Okay. So what I'm using is just a sprinkler, old-fashioned sprinkler, which is okay.
An old-fashioned sprinkler just does the job and maintains plenty of moisture there.
Okay.
And, of course, it's dependent upon how good a... your soil is. So if you've got biochar, which locks the moisture in, you can use another product called zeolite, which also locks the moisture into the soil, and compost.
Plenty of compost.
Compost. Yes. That'll hold the moisture down in little soft sponges.
Yes.
Suck up the moisture and allow it to, get to the plants where it's needed.
Okay, fantastic. With the cost of water being so expensive now, as we know it is, a rainwater tank or two is a great investment, isn't it?
Yes and no.
It's not very helpful today.
I mean, we're on 780 square metres, and the house takes up a fair amount of the land we've got there. And I have around the side of the house a water tank that will hold about 2,100 litres of water. Now, I will go through 2,100 litres of water in my vegetable garden inside 3 days.
Wow.
So that's useless. And, in the middle of summer, when your plants need the water, your tanks are bloody empty.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to go on that basis, you've got to bite the bullet and have large storage of water that you can save and harvest.
Tanks dug into
big,
the ground.
Big tanks or whatever. Mm. Or just bite the bullet like I do and I use the hose,
the
hose from the main, pay the bill.
Okay. Well, I was thinking because you can get smallish tanks, because I don't have a lot of room on my property, but I know that there are tanks that you can get, smallish tanks, which you can just drill into the down pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I might get one of those just for my pots because I have a lot of pots. So at least you're gathering up, you're using that source, resource, which is
otherwise just going nowhere. Otherwise just waste that ending up in the bay.
Might as well use it, exactly. How often in summer should our gardens be watered and what time of the day is best? I think you've actually gone through that. Yeah. 3 o'clock in the morning or as early in the morning as you can.
As early as you can.
I do it as soon as I get out of bed.
Yep.
And how often? God, use your digit.
Once again, use that digit. Go out and test the soil or let the plants do the walking and the talking for you. Have a look at the leaves.
If the leaves
look like they're starting to collapse, they need a good drink.
Yeah, okay. Pot plants, how often should they be watered during the hotter months and what is the best nozzle, actually, to attach to our hoses?
Something that puts out a very, very soft shower.
Even soft shower, okay.
And your pots, once again, depending on where they are, they might be around the covered area of the house or the south side of the house, they might need watering once every couple of weeks in the middle of summer. It's once again, you've got to use
that
digit. Stick
that finger in. Just be prepared to have a black nail. How can we tell when we are watering a pot plant? How can we tell if they've been watered enough? Is it is it about the water coming out the bottom of the pot?
No, it's not.
What is it about?
Okay. And people might have seen this when they've actually been watering, is they'll go and put a hose over a pot and then the water starts to soak through and all of a sudden you're getting all these air bubbles coming on the top.
Yeah.
That pot has become very, very dry and it's full of air, not moisture. So the water's going through and it's pushing air up and that air shouldn't be coming up. So you've got to water that until you stop seeing the air and then leave it.
Okay.
And then keep a regular, look at how that plant is, how it's that pot's reacting.
Growing,
Stick your finger in again, make sure that there's moisture in there.
Okay, all right. When it comes to new plants, we should ideally not plant them in the heat of summer as they'll battle to become established in the heat. When they are planted any other time of the year, how often should they be watered before they are considered established? Like I'm going to plant some today.
Yeah.
Should I water them every day for the next week?
You shouldn't.
What, how often?
It just depends on the weather, whether it's going to rain.
Well, if it's not going to rain, say it's not going to rain.
So my method of planting, whether I use bare-rooted plants or whether you use plants in pots, is I will stick them in a bucket that's got some sea salt in there. And that sea salt will stimulate the root growth when once that plant has been then put into the soil.
So stop for a second. You're putting in a bucket of water with sea salt.
Putting in a bucket of water with sea salt in it.
With water up to the top of the plant or to the top of the...
Yeah, because I know that, you know, I know it's not going to be sitting in there for hours, so it might be sitting in there for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, that's all.
Okay.
Pull one out and stick another one in while I take it across and put that one in the ground.
Yeah.
And then you must water that plant in, and I don't care if it's pouring with rain. Get out there and water that plant in, because once you put a pot into the soil, it's a totally different...
A plant into the soil.
The plant into the soil, it's a totally different regime that you've put it into, and you need to ensure that you're washing that air out of the potted area.
And absorbing the new soil.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you might, if it's been raining after that, you might just go out there and once again just check the soil with your digit, stick it in the ground, and just see what it's like.
Okay,
And then just keep your eye on it. Mm. How long does it take for a plant to establish? Well, it's dependent upon what the plant is. But even if that plant you're putting in there was classified as a drought tolerant plant, that is only drought tolerant once it is established. And that might be 1 year, it might be 2 years before it's fully established. So you've got to be mindful that while they're establishing, they've got to have that moisture.
Okay, all right. I'm just looking at my notes here, and I know you've already said, you know, we've had a lot of rain. I don't feel like we've had a lot of rain. I feel like we've had a lot of small showers, and I feel like, is that really enough to get through the soil down into the roots of the plants?
What we've had this season has been absolutely incredible. We are now starting to find that when I'm doing digging in my backyard, we've got a water table set up in that soil again. That means that the deeper you go, it's not dry, but there's moisture down there.
Oh,
so the water is coming onto the top and is being pushed through. Mm. And what we actually have within that soil profile is a thing called a perched water table.
Oh.
And that is where the roots will go down as far as they can into that perched water, and that's the drinking roots, not the feeding roots, but the drinking roots, and they will establish in that beautifully. So it's a matter now, come this summertime, you make sure that your garden is all well mulched, because we've got to protect what we've got in that soil
that perched water table,
and just keep adding to it. Keep adding to it. Don't let it dry out.
Okay, well, I didn't realise we'd had quite so much.
Like, so we had great.
In that instance, I guess a rain gauge would be a clever thing to purchase, so we can gauge how much rain we've had each week. Is that right? And if we had a rain gauge, we'd be going, okay, we've had how many millimetres or something, and then we'd be happy. Four, three, five?
On a regular basis, you know. You'd want to just go out there and just make sure that, you know, you're getting a minimum of 4 mil of water.
Yeah, yeah.
But... you know, there's lots of other ways of looking at that. I have an app on my phone that is area specific to where to this area.
Oh,
all right, so it's got Mount Eliza written on it.
Yeah,
and I can go into that, and it will tell me exactly how many mil of rain we've had during the day, and then I can go back and see what the precipitation has been for the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the 6 months and all that. So,
we all need
and
that
that's
app.
Just a free app that's on the phone.
That's fantastic. I need to get that. Now, it's easy to assume that our old trees don't need to be watered because they're so well established, but they can dry out too.
Yeah, and they can. And a lot of people, you'll see if you've got a big old tree, you'll see someone watering the tree and they're spraying the bottom of the trunk on the ground.
Mm.
When that's doing absolutely nothing, because there's no root system down there for the uptake of that water.
Mm-hmm.
The uptake of that water is around
the outside of the tree.
Canopy.
The
tree canopy. The
canopy.
Line.
There's another word for it, but yes, I know. Yeah. That's right. I know.
It's called the drip line.
The drip line. That's it. The drip line. Thank you.
So with a bigger plant, you need to be making sure that you're watering out away from the trunk, mm-hmm. around to where the edge
where
of the canopy
roots
is.
Are. Okay. Yep. Yep. Fantastic.
And that's where all the feeder roots are. Because when it rains, the water hits the leaves, and if it's an evergreen tree, and it sheds it across to where the outer edge of the plant is, and the water drops down, and that's where the feeder roots are out to.
So think of an umbrella. Think of when you've got an umbrella over your head.
That's a great
it's going
way
to be dripping down
Absolutely.
Outside your body, not on top. Thank you, Keith. Yeah. That's been fantastic information.
It's a pleasure.
Now, we hope this has provided our listeners with some good watering advice. Ideally, we want to have a happy and healthy garden, using the least amount of water to help save on our water bills and conserve that precious resource. Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au. And happy gardening.